Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top of Daf Lamed Hey. At the end of our previous shiur, we learned the Mishnah that introduces the halachas regarding the esrog. Continuing with Dinam of Esrog, the top line, we have a Tanaic source, Tonu Rabbanan pre-eitz hadar. That's a quote from the Pasuk. And the drosha on the Pasuk is, the elaboration is, Eitz Shetam Eitzo Upiryo Shaveh. The Pasuk says pre and eitz. So the juxtaposition of these words indicates that it's a type of tree whose wood has the same taste as its fruit. Heve Omer Ze Esrog. This is the Esrog. So when the Torah says that on the first day of Sukkot you shall take a pre-Eitz Hadar, we know that we're talking about a tree whose wood and fruit have the same taste. That's the Esrog. Question, the Amor Pilpilin. Notice that we have a long question marking, and in the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we have been using since the beginning of this Masechta, you will find in the Pirush Chai on page 110, the illustration 550, a drawing of what this plant looks like, the pilpilin. Pilpilin sometimes is translated as pepper. That's a peppercorn, the spice pepper as opposed to the vegetable pepper. So maybe the Torah, when it says pre-Eitz Hadar, is saying use pilpilin as the fruit for this mitzvah, the mitzvah of lulav, the kidisanya. And the idea of pilpilin is found in the following source, where you see it described as a tree whose wood and fruit are the same. Kidisanya, as you see in this source, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say, Mimashma Shinemar, Unetatem Kol Eitz. The Pasuk here is a Pasuk coming from the context of the mitzvah or the halacha of Orla. Orla is a halacha where you're not allowed to use or benefit from the fruit of a fruit tree during its first 3 years. So the Pasuk says, Unetatem Kol Eitz. Eini yodea shehu eitz ma'achol. Would I not know that since we're talking about not eating from the fruits, that it is obviously a fruit tree? Because the end of the pasuk says, lo yochal, don't eat from it. So I understand by the end of the pasuk, the fact that it talks about don't eat from its fruits, so it's a fruit-bearing tree. Ma tamud lomar eitz ma'achol. Why does the Torah add the word ma'achol? It says, Unatatem kol eitz ma'achol, a tree from which you eat. You don't need to say ma'achol, a tree from which you eat, because the end of the pasuk tells me, don't eat from it. So obviously it's an eitz ma'achol. So what does the expression eitz ma'achol tell me? It tells me, eitz shetam Eitzo upiryo shoveh. The juxtaposition of the words eitz with ma'achol. Eitz is the wood, ma'achol is the fruit. So we learn from this, it's a type of tree where the taste of the wood and the fruit are the same. Heve omer ze pilpilin. Well, that shows me, or that points to the pilpilin. L'lamdecha, and we learn through this that shapilpilin chayovin ba'orla, that pilpilin are bound to the laws of Orla, that namely during the first 3 years of a pilpilin tree, one cannot benefit from the pilpilin fruit. the aim, Eretz Yisrael chasera klum. And we see from here that the land of Israel is lacking in nothing. It has everything it needs. Shenemar, the Pasuk says regarding Eretz Yisrael, lo sechsar kol ba. Nothing is missing. Everything that you need is found in the land of Israel. And Israel has even pilpulin growing in it. So our question is, why do we say with confidence that pre-Eitz Hador is the Esrog based on Tam Eitzo Upirio Shoveh, when that same characteristic you find by the Pilpulin? So the Gemara answers, Hasam Mishum Delo Efsher. There, in the case of the Pilpulin, it's not possible to fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog using Pilpulin as the pre-Eitz Hador of the Torah. Why not? Hechinavit, what would you do? What suggest? How would you do the mitzvah? Ninkoit Chada, if you look at illustration 551, you'll see what we're describing. If you were to take one peppercorn as the in place of the Esrog, so to speak, lo minkiro l'kichosa, it's not noticeable that you're taking anything. It's so small. Ninko treo tlosa, suggestion would be take two or three. Well, that isn't good either, because pri echod omar rachmona v'lo shnayim u'shlosha peros. The pasuk says ulekachtem lochem pri eitz hador, and that indicates in one fruit and not two or three. Hilkoch lo efsher. Therefore, we conclude regarding the pilpulin, it's not possible that it is what the Torah is referring to when it says pre-Eitz Hador in the context of the Lulav Esrog of Sukkis. We continue in the Gemara, and we have some markings that we want to take note of. On the side, under the Mivneh heading, you see the double underline that highlights Gimel Deos, three Deos. In our Gemara, you'll see Rebbe and Rebbe Avo and Ben Azai. Each one is marked with this double underline. So there are three opinions. Eich Lidrosh Hamila Hadar. The Pasuk says pre-Eitz Hadar. What are we to make of that word Hadar? Of course, we can't lose sight of the fact that this Pasuk is referring to the Esrog. So we're going to see different aspects of the Esrog as reflected in these different drushes of the word Hadar. The diamond highlights the expression Al Tikri Hadar, which is a common Torah Shebaal Peh method of don't read the word as it is, but you can read it another way as well. And this Al Tikri, don't read it this way, but rather another way, is not it's not a game, a word game, but rather it's something based on an oral tradition, bearing in mind that the Torah was given without vowels. So you can take oftentimes the same letters and vowelize it differently, coming out with a different result. So we continue in the Gemara. Rebbe Omer, Al Tikri Hador, Elo Hadir. Now, Hadir is you can call it a type of barn, a corral where there are animals that live in the barn. Ma Dir Ze, Yeshbo Gedolim Ktanim, Tamimim Ubalim Umin. Just like a barn has in it animals that are adult, that are young, that are unblemished, that are blemished. Hachanami, so too with regard to the tree that the Torah is referring to. Yeshbo gedolim muktanim tmimim bali humin. There are large ones, small ones, unblemished and blemished. So that somehow is supposed to be a description of that's unique to the Esrog tree. The Gemara asks, "Otu shar peros lesbahu gedolim tan mutamin bali mumin." What other trees don't have those characteristics—large fruits, small fruits, unblemished and blemished? So what is Rebbe's intention here? Elo hochi ko'omar. So rather, this is what Rebbe means to say. Ad sheboin ketanim, adayin gedoilim kayomin. Until the small fruits, the new fruits appear, the adult fruits are still on the tree. That is an unusual phenomenon, and that is characteristic of the Esrog tree, where in effect you can go from one season to the next, and or one year to the next, where you'll have the new year's Esrog blossoming, and last year's old Esrogim are still on the tree. Rabbi Avo Omar, Al Tikri Hodor, Elo, Davor Shedor, Vilono, Mishana, Lishana. Rashi points out that what Rabbi Avo is saying is basically the same thing as what Rebbe was saying. He just looks at the word with a different vowelization. Instead of Hodor, as Rebbe treated as Hadir, a barn, rather Hodor means Ha-dor. Hodor in and of itself would mean something pleasant or glorious. But Ha-dor means something that dwells. And Rabbi Yifal is saying it's a type of fruit that stays, that dwells on the tree from year to year, as we described just before with Rebbe. Ben Azai Omer, Al Tikri Hodor Elo Hidur. The word Hidur, in a minute, will become very clear. Shekein Veloshen Yevoni, in Greek, Kurin Lemayim Hidur. We're familiar with the term Hydra, as in hydroelectric, or hydroponics. The word Hydra, a reference to water. So Ben Azai sees in the word Hodor, which is in the Torah, an echo of that which in Greek means water. The A Zohi Shegodel Al Kol Mayim. What kind of tree requires constant watering? Most trees derive their water supply from natural rainfall. But the Esrog tree, have a Omer Ze Esrog, must say that the Esrog, this is characteristic of the Esrog tree, is that it needs a much larger amount of watering than other common trees. So when the Torah says Priets Hador, Ben Azai tells me, the Torah is telling me, take the fruit of that kind of tree that needs constant watering, and that is the Esrog. Shel Asherav Shel Irhani Dachas Posel. The Mishnah said that trees that are either worshipped or Esrogim that come from cities guilty of idol worship, those Esrogim are unfit. My time, oh, why is that? Answer, Kevon de l'sreifa koi, since Esrogim that grow from Asherot trees or that come from idolatrous cities, the wares, the goods of idolatrous cities are supposed to be burnt, so the Esrog, being that it comes from such a city, from an Ira Nidachas, it needs to be burnt. Kitusei Mechtas Shirei. It's viewed as if it's already burnt. Now, the literal translation of Kitusei Mechtas means smashed. Its dimensions are smashed, meaning the Esrog, as we learned in the Mishnah, has a minimum size. But since the Esrog from an Asherah or an Ira Nidachas is to be burnt, and we look at something that is destined to be burnt as if it's already burnt, so it's ash, it doesn't have the shi'ur, the size requirement of an esrog anymore, and therefore it's unfit. Shel orlo posel. By the way, we should just mention parenthetically that the psul of Asherah Nir Nidachas is not a psul of Isurei Hanoah. There's a concept of things that are from idolatrous origins are forbidden to derive pleasure from. That is true, but that on those grounds we cannot disqualify the Esrog, because the Esrog is being taken as a mitzvah, and with regard to mitzvahs, there's a concept, mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. Mitzvahs were not given for the purpose of deriving pleasure. It's true that many people who fulfill a mitzvah feel a sense of pleasure of having done the mitzvah, but the purpose of the mitzvah is not for that. It's not to provide pleasure. And hence, using something that is forbidden in pleasure would not be excluded from the realm of mitzvah performance. However, on the grounds that the item is destined to be burnt, and therefore it doesn't have a sufficient size to it, on those grounds we disqualify the esrog of the asherah or the irhani dachas. We continue in the Gemara. Shel orla posel, the esrog coming from an orla tree, that's a tree that's in its first 3 years of growth. So the fruit is called orla, and it is forbidden to eat orla fruit. And in a moment, we're going to try to understand the fact that the orla fruit is forbidden to be eaten. That somehow is going to prevent us from using it as an esrog of a mitzvah. But again, we have to review the point we just mentioned. It's true that orla is also osur bahano. One is not allowed to benefit from orla. However, just because it's osur bahano does not mean it's not suitable for the mitzvah, for mitzvah performance. So we have to analyze what is the element of the orla fruit that precludes it from being useful for the mitzvah of esrog. Just a further word of introduction. Another Torah requirement for the arba minim is it must be mine. Ulekachtem lochem beyom harishon. It has to be your own, something that you can claim is yours. So the Gemara's goal right now will be to help define the parameters of what is considered yours. What characteristics must an item have in order for me to be able to call it it's mine? So the Mishnah, having said that esrog of orla is possible, we have a topic heading on the side, the nosei, where we've recorded this. Esrog shel orla eino nechshav lochem. The esrog from an orla tree, from a tree in its first 3 years, is not considered yours. Based on what? So 1.1 is ein bo heter achila. I can't eat it. So since I can't eat it, so it's not considered mine. Another possibility, point number 2, ein bo din momon. It doesn't have any financial value. In other words, if I take an orla esrog and exchange it for another item, the transaction won't be effective. It doesn't have any value that I can offer in exchange for something else. It has no moment value to it. Now, the Gemara. We said that an orla esrog is posel, is unfit. My taima. Why is that? Pligi ba Reb Chiya bar Oven Rav Asi. We have two names, and the Gemara doesn't say who holds what. Later, the Gemara will come back to this, of who says what. But at this time, at this point in time, all we have are two names. Chad Omar, one says, Lefi she'ein bo heter achila. The lacking in the orla esrog is that it's something you cannot eat, and therefore it cannot be considered yours. V'chad Omar, and when we say it can't be considered yours, again, it can't be considered lochem, which is a requirement of the Torah. Ulekachtem lochem, it has to be yours. And since you can't eat from it, so it's not considered lochem. V'chad Omar, lefi she'ein bo din momon. The other opinion says, because it doesn't have any financial money value. Orla, as we indicated before, is osur bahano. You cannot benefit from it, so it doesn't have any financial value. Kosalka daite, the assumption is man deboy heter achilo lo boy din mamon, the one that requires heter achila in order to be considered lochem doesn't require that it has financial value. Uman deboy din mamon, and the one that requires it to have financial value in order to be considered yours, lo boy heter achila, he does not require it to be eaten or have the ability to eat. And there are areas in halacha where one can exist without the other, and we'll see these points come up in the discussion of the Gemara. So we're making an assumption right now that each opinion is exclusive of the other opinion, that in order to be considered lochem you need only one characteristic. One opinion says the characteristic you need to have is that you have it has a heter achila, and the other opinion says the characteristic it needs to have is din mamon. Again, the Gemara mentioned kos salka daite, that means it's an assumption, but these when you see that expression of kos salka daite, you know that later in the Gemara things are going to change. We continue. Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah shel truma temea posel, an esrog that was tithed as a truma tithe, but it became defiled. Such an esrog is unfit for the mitzvah. Now, what can we say about truma temea? Can it be eaten? No. Does it have value, money value, financial value, or value per se? The answer to that is yes. The Mishnah says that shel truma tamea is posel. Bishlamo lamanda omar lefi she'ein bo heter achila shapir. According to that opinion, that makes sense. That in order to be considered lochem, it has to be something you can eat. Truma tamea you cannot eat. So, therefore, it's unfit. Ela lamanda omar lefi she'ein bo din mamon. But according to the opinion that said that the Orla Esrog is unfit because it doesn't have value, Amai, why is the Truma Temea Esrog disqualified? It does have value. Hare Masika Tachas Tafshilo. You can use it as fuel. Masika is to burn it. What do you do with Truma Temea? In general, when you have truma that became defiled, it is to be burnt, and in the course of its burning you're allowed to benefit from its burning. You can use it as fuel under to fuel your food being cooked, tachas tafshilo, under your pot that's of food being cooked. So at this point, to suggest that the shortcoming of orla is because it doesn't have value, why then would the Truma Temea be disqualified? Ella, beheter achila kule alma loy pligi de bo'inan. So the Gemara here makes a change from the kosalka daita that we saw before. It reverses that and says, as far as heter achila is concerned, everyone agrees that in order to be considered lochem, it has to be something you can eat. Therefore, orla, you can't eat it, so it's not considered lochem. Truma tamea, you cannot eat, therefore, it's not considered lochem. And therefore, they're both disqualified. The question is, now, what is the machloikis? We had a machloikis between Rav Chia bar Oven and Rav Asi. Ki pligi, the machloikis, is bedin momon. Does it have to have financial value? Mor sovar, heter achilo bo'inon, din momon lo bo'inon. One opinion says that it's enough that the esrog has heter achila in order for it to be considered lachem, even if it doesn't have financial value. Umor Sovar Din Momo Nami Bo'inon. The other Amoraic opinion holds that in order for an esrog to be acceptable, not only must you be able to eat it, but it also has to have financial value. So that's an Amoraic controversy. Is one element enough, heter achila enough, or do you need, in addition to heter achila, din mamon? This machlokis has no bearing on orla nor truma tamea. Both of those are lacking in a heter achila, and therefore they're both disqualified. Concerning what then does this Amoraic controversy have relevance to? Again, we're being a little repetitious, but just for the sake of clarity, there was a machlokis between Rav Chiya Bar Oven and Rav Asi. Their machlokis, though, has no bearing on Orla nor Truma Tamea, because Orla and Truma Tamea are clearly disqualified, according to everybody, by virtue of the fact that they don't have the minimum requirement of heter achila. Where do you see a machlokis? If you can find an item that there is a heter achila, an item that you're allowed to eat, but it doesn't have din momo, that you can't use it in commercial terms. So the Gemara asks, my binayu, what will the point of difference be between these two opinions? In other words, what is it that has a heter achila but has no financial value, something that you can eat but has no market value? The Gemara answers, there is something that will be a point of difference. Meiser Sheni Shibushalayim Alibo de Rabbi Meir. In learning the Mishnah, so we mentioned Meiser Sheni, and that, we'll repeat it now. Meiser Sheni is a tithe, it's 10% of one's produce that one tithes on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle. What does he do with that tithe? He takes the food, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains to Jerusalem and eats it in the walls of Yerushalayim. That's basic Meiser Sheni. The Gemara mentions Meiser Sheni Shibushalayim Aliba de Rabbi Meir, according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Let us explain. Rabbi Meir's opinion about Meiser Sheni is, it's called Momon Gavoah, that once you tithe it and bring it to Yerushalayim, it's considered owned by heaven. Momon Gavoah, the money from on high. In other words, you have a privilege to eat it, but you cannot use it in any financial commercial context. So Meiser Sheni represents something that you have. Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim, only in Yerushalayim you're allowed to eat it. So it's something that represents heter achila. You have a right to eat it. You have a privilege to eat it. But you have no further connection to it in any financial or commercial sense. In other words, you can't use Meiser Sheni, let's say according to Remeir, to acquire some item with it. Therefore, Leman d'Omar lefi she'ein bo heter achila, the opinion that explained earlier that the chisoron in Orla was that you couldn't eat from it, and therefore an esrog of Orla was not acceptable. Well, an esrog of Meiser Sheni Shalayim, according to Rabbi Meir, already yesh bo heter achila, you do have the right to eat from it. So, since the potential exists for eating it, if you have a Meiser Sheni esrog in Yerushalayim, you can use it for the mitzvah of lulav, because it conforms to the Torah's lochem requirement. It's considered yours. Laman de'omar lefi she'en bo din momoin, according to the opinion that explained that Orla, in addition to the fact that you can't eat it, also lacks financial value, and in order to be considered lochem, it has to have financial value as well, commercial value as well, Meiser Sheni Momon Gavoahu. Meiser Sheni is considered heaven's property and not yours, and therefore it's not lochem. Up till now, we've been using pronouns. He says this and he says that. We had names before. We had Rav Chiya Bar Oven and Rav Asi, but we never associated with a name to a particular opinion. Here, the Gemara tries to do that. Testayim, the Rav Asi, the Omar Lefi She'ein Ba Din Mamon. Let us conclude that it's Rav Asi that requires an esrog in order to be considered lochem, that it has to have din mamon as well. Now, where do we see Rav Asi addressing this? The Omar Rav Asi, esrog shel meiser sheni, ledivrei Rabbi Meir, ein adam yoytze bo yedei chavaso b'yom tov. Ledivrei chachomim, adam yoytze bo yedei chavaso b'yom tov. So Rav Asi clearly goes on record as saying that the Meiser Sheni Esrog, according to Rabbi Meir, a person cannot fulfill his chova, his obligation on Yom Tov, on Sukkis. And that is because Meiser Sheni, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, is Momon Gavoa, so it doesn't have commercial value. According to the Chachamim that differ from Rabbi Meir, and they say that Meiser Sheni is not Momon Gavoa, it's Momon Hedyot. It has commercial value. You can take Meiser Sheni and betroth a woman with it. You can offer it to her as a payment to her in exchange for accepting marriage. And therefore, the Chachamim will tell you that it has a din Momon, and therefore you can fulfill your esrog sukkis requirement with an esrog of Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So you can see that Rav Asi presents the esrog of Meiser Sheni in those terms, having commercial value versus not having commercial value. So the opinion above that held din momon must be Rav Asi. Tistaye means let us conclude that way. Gufa. Now the Gemara quotes Rav Asi and adds to the list of items where ownership has significance, and the Machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim figures prominently regarding a number of other items. On the side of the Gemara we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, and we note Meiser Sheni Lefi Rabbi Meir is Momon Gavoa V'eino Nechshav Lochem, and it's therefore not considered yours. The Chachamim Cholkim, and the Chachamim disagree. This Machlokis Tanoim has a nafkamina, Lagabi has a practical halachic bearing on 3 points. Esrog, we discussed already, Matzah on Pesach, and Esau, dough, in the context of challah. Challah is a tithe that one separates from dough and presents to a Kohen, similar to the way we treat Truma. Let's now turn to the Gemara. Gufa, Omar Rav Asi, Esrog Shel Meiser Sheni, Ledivrei Rabbi Meir Ein Odom Yoytze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Yom Tov, Ledivrei Chachomim Odom Yoytze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Yom Tov. This we read already. Matzah Shel Meiser Sheni. Matzah, everyone knows what that is. You eat it on Pesach night. It's a mitzvah to eat matzah. However, this is matzah made from Meiser Sheni grains. Ledivrei Rabbi Meir, Ein Odom Yoytze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Pesach. Ledivrei Chachomim Odom Yoytze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Pesach. According to Rabbi Meir, you cannot fulfill your Pesach matzah requirement with matzah made from Meiser Sheni, and according to the Chachomim, you are able to fulfill. Esau Shel Meiser Sheni. Dough made from Meiser Sheni flour. Ledivrei Rabbi Meir Ptur Min Achala. According to Rabbi Meir, one would be exempt from tithing that dough and giving the challah portion to the kohen. L'divrei chachamim, chayeves b'challah. According to chachamim, if you have dough made from meiser sheni flour, you are obligated to tithe it. Maskiflo Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks, Bishlama Isa, I understand the case of the dough. Ksiv reishis ariso sechem. The pasuk just quoted is a pasuk from the mitzvah of challah, and it is a reference to the dough that you made, so you have to tithe from it. Without getting into literal translations, but you see the suffix of the word ariso sechem, chof mem, means your dough. For our purposes, we're not translating literally, but that's the idea over here. The dough must be yours. So, what is it about the dough that must be yours? So, don't forget, we're dealing with Shitas Rav Asi. It has to have a din mamon. So, according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, it doesn't have a din mamon, so it's not considered your dough. Therefore, you don't have to tithe it. You tithe only dough that is yours. According to the Chumim, Meiser Sheni is considered yours, so you have to tithe it. Esrog Nami, with regard to Esrog, also the issue of it being yours is stated in the Torah. Siv Lochem, which equals Mishel Lochem. It has to be yours. And therefore, according to Rebbe Meir, Meiser Sheni, Mamon Gvoa, it's not yours. You don't fulfill Esrog with it. According to the Chumim, Meiser Sheni is Mamon Hedyot. It's considered common value, it's considered therefore yours, and you can fulfill the mitzvah with it. It's considered lochem, according to the Chachomim. Elo matzah, miksiv matzaschem. With regard to matzah, does the Torah write that word matzaschem, your matzah? It doesn't say that. It says, bo'erev tochlu matzos, eat matzah, not regardless of whether it's yours or not. That being the case, why in the world would Rabbi Meir say that you're not yotze using matzah of Meiser Sheni? Omar Rabo Bar Shmuel, V'i Temo, another version of the name is Rav Yemar Bar Shalmiya, they explain, Asya Lechem Lechem. There's a Gezerah Shava, a word comparison, using the word Lechem between these two topics. The topic of matzah and the topic of challah. Now challah, we mentioned already, it says reishis ariso sechem. By challah we understand the need for it to be yours. So let's see this in the Gemara. Ksiv hocha, it says here regarding matzah of Pesach, lechem oini. Ksiv hosam, and it says there in the context of challah, the challah tithe, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, it says v'hoya be'ochlechem milechem ha'oretz. So you see the word lechem over there by challah. Ma lahalon mishelochem v'lo mishel meiser, just like there by challah, in which it said reishis ariso sechem, indicating it has to be yours and not Meiser, af kan mishelochem velo mishel meiser. So too by matzah, because of the word comparison, Rabbi Meir will insist that it has to be yours and hence not meiser, which Rabbi Meir views as mamon gavoa. Lemo misayale. Let us say that the following source supports Rav Asi. A technical point that's going to be central to the Gemara right after the source is when you see lema is a suggestion. Can we say that this source supports him? Let's read the source. It says, Esau shall meiser sheni p'tura min achalo divra b'meir v'chomomrim chayeves b'chalo. Dough of meiser sheni is exempt from chalo, that's according to Rabbi Meir. And according to Chachamim, Meiser Sheni dough needs to be tithed. It's Chayeves Bechala. Now, this source, word for word, is what Rav Asi, who is an Amora, who is later, of course, than the source, it's word for what he says. So the Gemara is wondering, why does the Gemara introduce this source with some level of hesitancy, where it says, can we say that this supports him? Lemo misayele? The Gemara asks with a tone of wonderment, shall we say, can we say that this supports him? It is exactly what he said. Generally speaking, if you would introduce a source like this, you would say, Tanya Nami Hochi, or Kidisanya. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have learned thusly in a Tanaic source, just like Ravasi. Why does the Gemara on the third line from the top say, can we say that this supports him, when this is exactly what Ravasi said? Ella, what the Gemara is hesitant about is, what the Gemara's question was, can we use this source to support everything Rav Asi said? Rav Asi did not limit his remarks to the challah issue, the tithe of challah from Maaser Sheni, though that was one of the points that he made. But our question is, can we say that just like this source corroborates what Rav Asi said about challah, can we say this will serve as a corroboration of the points he made regarding matzah and esrog as well? Or possibly there's something unique about the law of challah and the Torah's approach to challah, making it different than esrog and matzah, and hence it might very well be there's a machlokus regarding Maaser Sheni Esau for challah purposes, but we can't extrapolate from that to the other topics. So now, let's see this discussion in the Gemara. Ella, mi debeha pligi, can we say that from the fact that they argue, Rabbi Meir and Nechama argue regarding challah, beha nami pligi, regarding the esrog and matzah, Rabbi Meir Nachman would have their same controversy. Oidilma shiny Esau, or maybe the case of the Maaser Sheni dough is different, and only here Rabbi Meir would say there is exemption. Diomakro ariso sechem, ariso sechem treizimni. The Torah repeats the word ariso sechem twice, emphasizing the need for it to be yours, thereby excluding Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. In other words, there's a special emphasis on being, let's say, completely yours in the case of challah. And only there, Rabbi Meir would be aroused to say that, well, Maaser Sheni dough is excluded from the tithe of challah. However, in the case of esrog and matzah, where you don't have a repetition, it could be that Rabbi Meir will not disqualify Maaser Sheni esrog or Maaser Sheni matzah from fulfilling the mitzvah. Let us look at the Rashi. Oh, Dilma Shaini Isa, Rashi on the second narrow line. The Hohu Dekama Rabbi Meir Ptura. It could be that only here Rabbi Meir says his exemption. Dichtiv miuto yesero. There's an extra limitation, namely the repetition of Ariso Sechem. Avol bechad miuto lo nafkolon. But with one exclusionary expression, I wouldn't learn out the disqualification of Maaser Sheni that came under Mishri Lachila, since it is something you can eat. Rabbi Meir agrees. Everyone, the Torah says you can eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Afagav de les bodin momon lochem karina bay. Even if it doesn't have commercial value, Rabbi Meir might concede that it's considered yours. It's sufficient that it has a heter achila. So this point remains unresolved. As far as can we say that Rav Asi and his analysis of Rabbi Meir, which excludes Maaser Sheni Esrog and Maaser Sheni Matzah from mitzvah fulfillment, can that be supported by this source, which doesn't mention them explicitly. The Gemara continues, and on the side we have a Noseya topic heading, and we indicate that this goes till Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, where the Gemara is, it says Biur Psule Esrei Shel Mishnah. The Gemara in rather short passages explains each one of the different problems regarding Esroig mentioned in the Mishnah. Shel Truma Tamea Psula. Why? The less Ba Heter Achila. This we mentioned earlier, that everyone agrees that a minimum requirement in order for it to be considered yours is the ability to eat it. Truma Tamea you cannot eat, therefore it's disqualified. V'shel Truma Tahoro Lo Yitol. Our Mishnah mentioned as a first choice you should not use Truma Torah. It's undefiled Truma. Don't use that for your mitzvah of Esrog. Pligi Ba Rav Ami Rav Asi. There's a machlokes amoroyim as to why. Chad Omer Bnei Shem Machshira V'chad Omer Bnei Shem Mafsida. One opinion is that when you take the Esrog, you're taking it along with the Lulav, Hadassim, and Aravos. These, the Lulav, Esrog, Hadassim, they're stored in water, in a wet environment. And your hands are going to communicate wetness to the Esrog. And once a fruit becomes wet with water, so makes the fruit susceptible to tum'ah, to defilement. So once you make it, and we're talking here about truma, one must be careful that it does not become defiled. Pasuk says, Mishmeres Trumosai. And in view of the fact that I'm not allowed to cause truma to become tamei, we are we don't want people even to make the truma susceptible to tuma. So that is the reason, according to one opinion, why the Mishnah says, as a first choice, don't use truma tahora esrog. Again, that's an esrog. Someone harvested their esrog, and part of their esrog meats separated as truma to be given to a kohen. Don't use a truma esrog, because you're inevitably going to make it wet, thereby making it susceptible to becoming tamei. We're not saying that you're metamet, that's also to do, but you are making it susceptible to becoming tamei. As we said, only when wet the fruit can become tamei. V'chadomar mitnei shemafsido. Another opinion says you're causing loss. What do we mean by that? By taking the fruit of truma and holding it in your hands, so there's friction and there's an inevitable erosion of the outer surface of the fruit, and you're ruining it. Might be sound a little minor to many of you, but nevertheless, there's some type of loss that you are causing through your handling of it. And there's a prohibition of ruining truma in a physical sense. So we just saw two reasons why not to use an esrog of truma tahora. My binaya, what would a point of difference be between these two reasons? Kagon shekora aleo shame, where a person declared the truma tithe to set upon his esroigim chutz mikliposo chitzona, with the exception of the outer rind, where you said, I'm tithing these, I'm declaring these esrogim. He has you have to imagine a person has a harvest of esrogim, and he sets aside a certain number of them as truma, and in his declaration he says, I'm declaring these esrogim as truma except for the outer skin. So that the outer skin of each esrog in this particular tithing doesn't have any truma status to to it. That having been said, Leman de Omar mitnei shemachshira ika. True, the outer skin doesn't have truma status, but you are making it wet, and fruit, even if it's not truma, fruit that is wet, is susceptible to becoming tomei. So you are making it susceptible to tumah. The inner part, of course, is truma. Just the outer rind is not truma, but by making it wet, you are making the entire esrog subject or susceptible to tuma, including the truma part of it. Lamadam of Neshe Mafsida, according to the opinion that was concerned with the physical wearing down of the truma, that's not happening over here, because the part of the fruit that is subject to the friction we just described, the handling, is only the outer rind, and that is not being that prohibition of mafsida is something that's unique to truma. The outer rind here is not truma, so you're not doing anything wrong. You're not being mafsided. So in a case where a person had tithed his trumas with this declaration, I'm declaring it to be truma except for the outer rind, if you hold that the problem of truma tahora basically is mafsida, this kind of truma tithe would be permitted as a first choice for your mitzvah of esrog. V'im notav sher, the Mishnah says regarding the truma tahora, if you did use it, so it's kosher, it's acceptable. Leman to Omar, quoting the opinions we saw earlier, according to the opinion that said mitnei she'ein bo heter achilo, that the chisoron we saw before in the case of the orlo was because you couldn't eat from it, hare yesh bo heter achilo, truma is something that can be eaten. Leman to Omar lefi she'ein bo din mamon, according to the opinion that said that the chisoron, the lacking in orla was that it didn't have commercial value as well, hare yesh bo din mamon. Truma tahora has commercial value. For example, a kohen who receives truma can use that to betroth a woman. And there are other examples of its commercial value. So truma tahora has all the qualifications necessary for being considered lochem, being considered yours, and hence it's acceptable for truma, for esrog. Michelle Demai, Beishamai Poison, Beisilim Achshirin. When we learned the Mishnah, we explained Demai. Just to briefly recap, if you are a first time listener, Demai is produce that you bought from someone who is considered an Amoretz, who is not. Is ignorant, not trustworthy in his tithing. So the rabbis insisted that the purchaser re-tithe the produce just in case the original supplier didn't do it. So you have demai tithe, the rabbinic tithe of esrogim. You bought esrogim from an amoret, so Beis Shammai says you can't use it as your mitzvah of esrog. Beis Hillel says you can use it. My time all to Beis Hillel. Why does Beis Hillel say that it's considered yours? Kevon de iboy mafkir luhu l'nichse v'havei oni v'chozile. Since in theory or in potential a person could disown all of his properties, declare it hefker. And if a person were to do that, he would be considered impoverished. Someone who is impoverished is entitled to eat demai. It's something that you can feed to the poor. So, hashtonami, now too that you haven't actually declared unowned your property, lochem karina bay, it's considered yours. It is considered lochem because of this potential aspect. Disnan, the Tanaic source says, machilim esuaniyim demai vesuachsanya demai, that you're allowed to feed the poor this demai tithe. When we speak about the demai tithe, by the way, it doesn't include truma. Truma, we assume that amaratzim are mafresh truma. However, the my tithe does have in it the potential of miser rishon, and latent in the miser rishon is trumas miser, which is a tithe that is supposed to eventually be given to the kohanim as well. So, if you have set aside the demai tithe, according to Beis Hillel, since in potential you can eat it yourself if you were to be impoverished, so it's considered lochem. Ubeis Shammai, they disagreed. Ani lo ochil demai. According to Beis Shammai, a poor person is not entitled to eat the demai tithe. The demai tithe must be given to the Levi, and the Levi has to tithe it and give his 10% of what he received to a kohen. Disnan, and in this Tanaic source, we will see this machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. The source reads machilim aniyim demai v'achsanya demai. Achsanya we didn't elaborate on, but it has to do with the government's army troops, and the communities of any particular region were obligated to support the soldiers, and you could feed them the demai. But that's not central to our discussion right now, because we're focusing more on the oni aspect, because that has relevance to each and every individual insofar as the potential of his being mafkir, his nechosim, his declaring his property unowned and hence becoming himself impoverished. So we just read the beginning of this source, the Omer of Huna, Tana Rav Huna. He is an Amora, but he shares with us a source that reads Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Machim Asoniyim Besach Sanoyim Demai. Here you see Beis Shammai saying you cannot feed the poor the demai type. Beis Hillel Omrim Machilim Esoniyim Demai Besach Sanoyim Demai, and Beis Hillel says you can. Hence the machlokes that we saw before in the Gemara itself. Shel Meiser Sheni Shibushalayim Lo Yitol. The Meiser Sheni tithe that you have in Yerushalayim, and here you have Esrogim that you had tithed as Meiser Sheni, and you're now in Yerushalayim. The Mishnah says, as a first choice, don't use them for your mitzvah. And here the Gemara quotes opinions that we saw above. Leman Domar Mibnei Shemach Shira. The opinion before that we saw in the context of Truma Tahora, why not to take it? It's because you're making it susceptible by making it what? You're making it susceptible to becoming Tomei Hare Machshir. You're doing the same thing with the Meiser Shein Shleim, and Meiser Shein Shleim also must remain Tahor in order to eat it. So you don't want to make it susceptible to becoming Tomei, hence don't use Meiser Sheini Esroigim in Yerushalayim. According to the opinion before, explained the Truma Tamea problem, the Truma Tahora problem is that you're eroding the outer surface of it through handling it, and you're not allowed to mafseed, to ruin Truma Tahora. Likewise with the Meiser Sheni, Hare Mafsida, you're also handling it and causing its erosion. The Im Notal Kshera. If you did take Meiser Sheni Esrog Yerushalayim for your mitzvah, the Mishnah says you do fulfill your requirements. It's considered lochem. So Leman Domar Mipnei She'ein Bo Heter Achila, according to the opinion before by Orlo, who explained that its chisaron, its lacking, was that you couldn't eat from it. Well, if that's all that's required to be lochem, And since Orlo lacks a heter achila, Orlo is not acceptable. As far as Meiser Sheni is concerned, Divrei Hakol, then this Mishnah would be according to all Tanaic opinions. Meiser Sheni Shalayim is something that has a heter achila. And according to the Amora that said that in order to be considered Lochem, all it has to have is a heter achila, so Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim has a heter achila. And if that's all that's required, so all Tanoim would agree that Meiser Sheni Esrog is kosher for Mitzvah Esrog. Laman Domar Lefi She'ein Bo Din Mamon, according to the Amora, who explained earlier by Orla that its deficiency was that it has no commercial value, and therefore the Orla Esrog was disqualified. So in order to be considered Lochem, it has to have commercial value. Ha money, our Mishnah that says an Esrog of Meiser Sheni is kosher, Rabbonon hi. This would be only according to the Rabbonon that say that Meiser Sheni is Mamon Hedyot, and as such it has a Din Mamon. But according to Rabbi Meir that says Meiser Sheni is Mamon Gavoa, Rabbi Meir, and we saw this before, he holds that Meiser Sheni is considered belonging to heaven, and all you have is a privilege to eat from it, but you have no commercial value in it. This Mishnah then could not be according to Rabbi Meir. It would be according to the Rabbonon, once again, that say that Meiser Sheni is Mamon Hedyot and hence has commercial value. Just to go over that last point, and once it has commercial value, so it's considered Lochem. Also Chazosis. The Mishnah mentioned that if there was a type of superficial growth on the Esrog and it covered Rubo, it would be disqualified, be unfit for the mitzvah. Omar Rav Chisda. Before we continue, let's just note, by way of markings and structure, we have a mivneh, a structural note on the side. Roman numerals 1 and 2 appear in our Gemara, and the triangles, they are Shnei Lushonos B'Rav Chisda, two versions of Rav Chisda, Shechilek Bein Mokum Echod L'Shtayim Shloshim Mekomos. Rav Chisda makes a remark whereby he distinguishes between something on in one spot, Mokum Echod, versus over two or three different spots. In the case of Ba'olsa Chazozis, Roman numeral 1 has Rav Chisda going on the ratio of the Mishnah that speaks about Al Rubo, where a Chazozis covers the majority of the face of the surface of the Esrog. Roman number 2 has Rav Chisda focused on the case of Al Mi'uto, on a mute of the Esrog. So we now that we have a bit of a let's say map of the Gemara, Roman numeral 1, Rav Chisda is focused on the Reisha, where we just read the Divrei Maskil also Chazozis Al Rubo, and the Mishnah said it's Posel. Omar Rav Chisda, Dovar Ze Rabbeinu Hagodol Omro Hamokom Yeb Ozro. We've seen this expression earlier. This is a Daf Lamed Gimel, that is. This is rabbinic license. Rav Chisda quotes Rabbeinu Hagodol, quotes the words of Rav, and heaven should be should help to assist him. What does Rabbeinu HaGadol say? Loi shanu elo b'mokim echad. Opening your Pirush Chai, your book of illustrations, illustration 552. So Rav Chisda says that the psul of Chazozis is only if it's b'mokim echad. If it covers the majority of the Esrog in a consistent fashion, one spot, and that one spot is the majority of the Esrog. Avo b'shnayim u'shloshim mekomos, illustration 553. If it's segmented, different parts of the Esrog have chazozis on it. It's not concentrated in one continuous chazozis, but it's broken up into two or three different spots, covering the majority of the Esrog. Kosher, Rav Chisda quoting Rav would say that it's okay. Omar Rava. Rava, upon hearing this, says, Adarabba, to the contrary, B'shnayim u'shloshim mekomos havelei kemenumar u'pasol. Something that appears in two, something that's negative, as it causes in two or three different spots, that is a deficiency, and that's called menumar. Menumar meaning spotted. And we've seen this before. Spottedness is something that is undesirable. It's negative. Ela, E itmar asefa itmar. If any contrast is to be made, then it's to be regarding the seifa, the end of the end section, and the quote al miuto kosher, where there was also chazosis on a mute of the esrog, on a minority of the esrog. The esrog is still kosher. Omer of Chista, Dover ze Rabbeinu Hagadol Omro, v'amokom yeh ba'asro. The following was said by Rabbeinu Hagadol, by Rav, loy shanu elo b'mokom echad. Lo shanu, that it's kosher. And it's very important to note the difference between these two lashonos. The first lashon, we saw the expression lo shanu is on going on the psul. Here, the lo shanu is going on kosher. It's taught, the Mishnah teaches that it's kosher when the chazosis is on a minority of the esrog. Elo b'mokom echad, illustration 554. Where the chazosis is on a minority of the esrog, and it's also in one spot. Avol bishnam shloshim makomos, illustration 555. If the chazosis covers two or three different spots, even though it's still a minority of the surface area of the esrog, havile kemenumar upasal, it's considered something that's spotted, even though it's covering only a minority of the surface area, it's still disqualified. Omar Rava, illustration 556. The Al-Choytmoy, if it's on the top section, if the Chazozis is on the top section, Vafilu b'mashehu nami posel, even a negligible amount of surface covered with Chazozis, if it's at the upper part, it would render it disqualified. You know, even however, if we're on the lower part of the esrog, since it's a mute and it's in one spot, it would be okay. But since it's on the upper part of the esrog, where people's eyes are focused, it is disqualified. Notal pitmoso. For this section, we want to look at illustrations 563. Which you can see on page 113. In effect, it's the middle of the esrogim featured at the bottom of page 113. So the Mishnah spoke about the pitum being removed, and it said it was pasul. We also have illustration 567 of a mortar and pestle, and we'll appreciate that when we go into the Gemara. Notal pitmoso, tona Reb Yitzchok ben Elozar. Reb Yitzchok ben Elozar features a source, a two-word source that explains what pitmoso is. Notlo buchnoso. So buchnoso is the top of the pestle that you can see illustrated in picture 567. That's the, we'll say, the analogy to the pitum in picture 563. Rashi himself features two lashonos on this topic. We were explaining according to the first lashon in the Rashi. Niklaf. The Mishnah spoke about an esrog which was peeled. Omar Rava, Hai esroga de aglid ka'ina sumka kshera. An esrog that is peeled, like a ahino is a date, sumka is a red date. A date has, especially, you can see this especially if you leave a date to dry. There's a very thin outer layer, outer surface, outer peel, that we are using as an analogy to an esrog. An esrog also has that, has a very thin outer film or outer layer to it. If the esrog, the outer layer of the esrog is peeled, so it is considered kosher. Rashi at the bottom, kahina sumka, tamora aduma, a red date, v'afse li'achar shiniklaf, the red date, after it's peeled, nefach l'admumis k'derech kol haniklof l'beperos. It might be a function of oxidation, some chemical reaction where fruits, after you peel their outer surface, their outer thin surface, exposing the inner rind, when you leave them like that, they all eventually turn red. So Rava says if you peeled the outer layer of an esrog, it's still kosher. The Gemara asks, how can you say that? But the Mishnah says explicitly that peeled disqualifies the esrog. Loi kasha, there is no problem. The Gemara continues at the top of Lamed Vav Amid Aleph. Ha bekula, ha bemiktsasa. If, this might sound ironic, but if it's completely peeled, then it's kosher. If it's peeled only in parts, it's unkosher. That creates the situation of menumar, it's spotted. And we've mentioned already that spottedness is something that is no good. Nistak nikave. Nistak is cracked. Nikave, a penetrated, a hole. Tani ula bar chinina. Nikave nekev. This Tanaic source deals with a hole. Mefulash b'mashehu. Illustration 589. This you can see on page 118. There's a cutaway version of an esrog, but you can see there are a number of different points illustrated in this. The letter hey illustrates a nekev that is mefulash. It's a hole that goes through and through. So even if it's of a negligible size, it renders the esrog unfit. The she'eno mefulash, if it's a hole, but it doesn't run through, then it would be b'ki'isar. The illustration appropriate for this is illustration 581. You can see a hole is made by an item being pressed into the esrog, and an isar is a coin, so it's a certain size, it's a known size. These different kinds of holes, if it's mefulash, it will disqualify the esrog even if it's of negligible size, and if it's not mefulash, then it will disqualify it if it's an isar in size. And now we didn't emphasize probably the most important point, but Rashi mentioned this on the top. Toni ula bar chinino anike velo choser koi. We're going on the Mishnah that spoke about a hole without any diminishing of esrog content. The Mishnah mentions that a hole where there's no chisaron is kosher. The osahai tana lemeimar, this tana is coming to explain and qualify that. The im mefulash litzira litzira posel benekev kosher filu shomachad benek. If it's a thoroughfare, a through and through hole, that's called mefulash, even the size of a needle. There's no diminishing of esrog content, it's just a piercing of it through and through. Nothing is diminished as far as content is concerned. Nevertheless, it does disqualify. V'nekev shenu mefulash b'kisim rochav isim posav afa b'shaloch aser klum. A hole that's made by pressing something into the esrog without diminishing any of the esrog content also can disqualify if it has a diameter that of an isar coin. As Rashi says, Vafapi shelocha saklum, kugon tochav bo yosid over umasnisin bepochus mikisa v'sheinu mishvulash. The Mishnah that is matir, a nekev, a hole without any chisaron, therefore has to be a hole that, number one, it's not mefulash, and number two, it is less than an isar in size. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.